Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Idle Chatter. Ray Bohax here, the hot rod farmer over in New Jersey, Hackettstown, New Jersey, and wishing you a good day. That's not proper English, right? A well day. But wishing you well on your farm or ranch or whatever you're doing, or if you're an agronomist or an equipment dealer, and hopefully the good Lord is shining upon you today and you had a profitable and successful day. And like I always say, if you didn't, tomorrow will be a different day and better. Never in my life have I had to go from bad to worse, but I'm sure, hey, you live long enough, anything can happen. But I do not wish that to you at all, and I just wish you the Lord's blessings on your efforts today and for tomorrow and the next day. So I just want to thank you for clicking in, not tuning in, clicking in today. And I just want to everyone to know, and I need to say this more often, how appreciative I am. And I do not take lightly the idea that you listen to me and listen to this dry land farmer from Cat Swamp Road. And so I greatly, greatly appreciate your time that you spend with me. And hopefully, you know, one day we can meet and communicate. But, you know that I always welcome any type of communication from you, good, bad, indifferent, ugly. And you could always get in contact with me at Hot Rod Farmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. And I want to give a special shout out to Casey Riesman and his better half. And Casey contacted me the other day, and he is on the way to the Farm Machinery Show in Louisville. And I have to say that I'm jealous, I'm envious, because I am not going. So, hopefully he has a safe trip, and he's able to listen to Idle Chatter on the road, right? This is not on the road with Idle Chatter, but Idle Chatter on the road. On the road with Idle Chatter, hopefully, God willing, will be coming soon. And I'm planning for my first show to be about working with a DEF, diesel exhaust fluid company. I kind of mentioned that last week, but had some scheduling issues with the person I'm supposed to be working with, who is an old friend of mine. So probably the most knowledgeable person in the industry on the aspects of the diesel exhaust fluid and how it's manufactured and different in-field problems that he's seen. So hopefully, God willing, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to share that with you with the premiere on the road with Idle Chatter. And let me see what... I was a little bit disappointed because I was quite looking forward to going to a Neil Kinsey seminar this past week over in Quarryville, Pennsylvania. And he had gotten excited when I had seen it advertised probably right after Christmas or let's say the first of the year. And I called up and scheduled to reserve a seat and was looking forward to it. But it did not happen as far as my end is concerned, not on Mr. Kinsey's end, but on my end. Murphy's Law being what it is that we had... it was this past Wednesday, and the Monday and Tuesday was warm, probably in the high 40s to low 50s, which is, you know, quite warm for this neck of the woods for January. And then the Thursday and Friday was warm, but Wednesday, the day of the event, was icy. And you know, that normally doesn't stop me. You know, hey, it doesn't stop a farmer, right? I mean, I've driven all the way out to South Dakota in snowstorms to go to a learning event. But, you know, farming in New Jersey is difficult. And I guess, you know, in life, everything's got its own set of problems. I mean, you trade one set of problems for another. So life is never without problems. But what's difficult about farming in New Jersey is that you have to travel to get to any type of seminar and what to buy equipment. Buying equipment is really not that much of an issue because you don't do that all the time. But where this seminar was held in Quarryville, which is south of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which as the crow flies is not that far. It's maybe 130 or 140 miles one way. But the class started at 8 o'clock in the morning. So that means I'd have to get there 7:30, quarter to eight to register at the earliest, I mean, at the latest. And then I counted, there's eight different roads I would have to take to get there. And they're all two lane roads through towns. That part of Pennsylvania, that eastern part of Pennsylvania, not too far from New Jersey, is very eclectic. There's a lot of big, beautiful farms there, but also got a lot of development. And the roads are all, but we say back east, paved over cow paths. They're all two-lane roads going through towns with a lot of stoplights. And I made the mistake of going down that way once in the morning. So the class, I had to be there early. So even if I left at 4 o'clock in the morning, I would be hitting all of the school buses and rush hour on those two-lane roads with traffic lights going through towns. And my planter, when I bought my new planter, I had it custom built, and it was down in that neck of the woods also, but not quite as far. It was probably actually about 40 miles closer to the farm here than I needed to go to the Neil Kinsey seminar. And I made the mistake one time of leaving here very early, and I must have hit every traffic light and every school bus in 120 miles. And it literally took me 4.5 hours to go there to the planter place in Gap, Pennsylvania, Peckway Planters. And this event with Neil Kinsey was talking was further. So I said to myself, you know, it's supposed to be icy. I'll probably drive out of the ice. Murphy's Law having what it is the next day. It wasn't icy. He was just at the cusp. It was like 32 degrees and raining. But who wants to travel 5 hours one way, leave at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to a seminar for 8 o'clock? And that's if everything goes right. So I just said to myself, it's not going to work out. It wasn't meant to be, sadly. And then when the seminar got out at 3:30, quarter to four, then I would be hitting the same traffic coming home. So it was just a little bit too much. The logistics were just not there. And, you know, if it was someplace out I-80, I mean, I would go 5 hours out I-80 to a seminar because that's mindless. You get on I-80 and you just drive. But going through these towns and these, if you're not familiar with that part of the country, which you're probably not, is that none of these roads are straight. So I'd have to be driving in the dark early in the morning, and the signage is usually not that good. So let's say if you want to stay on Route 222, you have to make a left here, right here, left here, right here, and then you bypass the town or go through the side streets of the town. It's like I say, it's really not conducive. But to get back to that planter story, the next time I went down to the planter builder, and because I went down first to talk to him, and then I went down three or four times, and this was being built. This was back 4 years ago. I would go down and see it. But I left here at 8 o'clock in the morning. I left the farm. And by the time I got to those areas, everything was all subsided, and it took me 2.25 hours to get there. So 4.5 hours leaving earlier, 2.25 hours leaving later. And if that seminar started, let's say at 9:30, 10 o'clock, then it would have been a no-brainer. But it was, like I said, not meant to be. But I am taking a class this week, and I'm going for my points on my pesticide license at a Case IH dealer, which is in Pennsylvania also. That's about 120 miles away, and I will do that. And then this Thursday coming up, I have my local Grow Mark FS Winter Growers Meeting, which is also a points meeting for my sprayer license to maintain my pesticide license. In New Jersey, you have to keep taking classes and you have to get so many points, and they have these core and category points. I never really understood. I just take the classes and keep up to date. And I'm also going to take the dicamba class, which the past couple of years I've stayed for the dicamba class after the main class. Even though I don't use dicamba, I do like to learn, and it's always good to have knowledge. So that is basically it. No Neil Kinsey for me. Sadly, two classes this week. Next week, God willing, the New York State Farm Show, and Cody's going to be down in the Farm Machinery Show, Farm Equipment Show, and I'm going to be over here in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Cat Swamp Road. Life is not fair. So have a safe trip, Cody, if you're hearing this. And that is it. And today, what our show is going to be about is understanding detonation in a gasoline engine. And that's a topic that I think that is important for people to understand, because I personally think that there's going to be a trend back to gasoline engines, which we would say in the industry spark ignition engines versus diesel compression ignition engines. And I think with all the diesel emission standards and the complexity that needs to go along with it, and the cost and the upfront cost, and with this new group of gasoline engines coming out that you're going to see, I mean, you're not going to see a gasoline engine combine, or at least not in my lifetime. But I think you're going to see a lot of light-duty diesels go, or light-duty applications go to gasoline. And I think you're going to see some medium-duty applications as far as trucks are concerned go to gasoline. And then maybe some smaller farm equipment go back to gasoline. So I really think that that's an upcoming trend. And I also, matter of fact, I didn't even realize it. I saw it today at the truck stop when I was walking around. They were making a delivery, but the Mitsubishi Fuso cab over trucks, which I never knew that they had a gasoline version, they ended up having one. So I know there's a lot of trends going on with gasoline. I know here in New Jersey, a lot of the school buses are going back to gasoline. So we'll discuss that as we get into the topic of detonation. And I think that's why it's important for you to have an understanding of what detonation is in the gasoline engine, because if it detonates badly, it's going to blow up. And I don't mean it's going to blow up like a bomb, but it's going to take a ring land off the piston, and it's going to destroy the motor. And usually when it takes a ring land off, it hurts the bore, and it's not pretty. So that will be our topic today. But for right now, we are going to go into our Bushels and Cents segment. And as you know, I am a firm believer, and I'm doing my best to try to convince all of you that success on the farm or ranch is a three-legged stool: agronomy, marketing, and machinery. The best way is to establish how a poor decision or inaccurate diagnosis of a machinery issue costs your operation money. But instead of referencing just dollars, I will reference it in crop corn at $3.50 a bushel. And never forget, it is not what you make in your business, but what you keep that counts. Okay, so here's our Bushels and Cents situation. Your wife's car is 7 years old and has about 80,000 miles on it. She has an in-town job, and on the way to work one morning, the engine overheats. The repair shop in town says that it has a blown head gasket, and since it is a V6, both need to be replaced. The estimate is $2,000 for parts, labor, fluids, and machining of the cylinder head. In almost every instance, the head gasket failure is due to the coolant not being changed every few years. The anti-corrosion inhibitors become neutralized and eat away the head gasket, even though the freeze protection is still good. The lack of service cost your farm the equivalent of 572 bushels of crop. Let this not be you. And, you know, people are usually pretty good with checking for an additive package on the diesel engine, with using those little test strips and then adding a supplemental coolant additive. They really don't check that on a gasoline engine. And what most people do is just check the freeze point. Now, keep in mind that the boiling and recondensing cycles that go on naturally, which is called nucleate boiling in the cylinder head, will over time consume the additive package, but that will not impact the freeze point of the coolant, or the anti-freeze point, right? So if you go there And if you check things and it says, okay, it's minus 32 and you think it's great, that's wonderful. That's only one aspect of it, the freeze point. And so since gasoline engines for the most part are smaller, especially in lighter duty applications, car, pickup truck, or something, a machine that you'd have on the farm, the protocol is every few years to change the coolant instead of because the volume is so minimal compared to a big diesel engine. So most vehicles today, if they take 2 or 3 gallons of coolant, that's a lot. And I know, like on my little Ford Fiesta, I have to try like the devil to get a gallon and a half into it. So that is it. So like I said, let it not be you, but remember that every time that that coolant goes through a heating and boiling cycle, that some of the additive package is going to be consumed. And one of the things that happens to degrade first is the anti-corrosion inhibitors, and because it's got water mixed with the ethylene glycol or propylene glycol product, depending on what you're using, is that it has a propensity to corrode and actually sets up an electrolytic action with the materials. And that it's not electrolysis, it's an electrolytic action where it actually degrades. And it's very common if you have a newer, when I say newer engine, the past 20-25 years, and if you didn't cook it by having a thermostat stick and or running it out of coolant because you've had a hole in the radiator and kept driving it or using it, and if the head gasket fails, there's 9 chances out of 10, or probably 9.9 chances out of 10, is because you were not good with the maintenance of the antifreeze, the coolant. Alrighty? So let that not be you, and keep that in mind. You know, and that's the same thing if you have any liquid-cooled engines on the farm. Whether it's a, you know, the same thing holds true for diesel, but people seem to be better at checking that, hopefully. But you know, you have ATV, UTV, you have irrigation pump, you have your pickup truck, you have cars, you have a liquid-cooled lawn tractor or something, whatever it may be, it is the same scenario. So you don't want that coolant to become depleted. Alrighty, so now it is time for us to talk about detonation, or pinging, or whatever you want to call it. Well, in essence, what is going to happen is that we have to back up a little bit and think of the ignition event in the gasoline engine. And I'll say it, you know, in the beginning now, this is going to be any gasoline engine. I don't care whether it's a one-cylinder engine or a 12-cylinder engine. It's, we're talking about gasoline combustion versus diesel combustion. So gasoline combustion, as I said in the past, is called spark ignition because it takes a spark to ignite the mixture, the air-fuel ratio, and in a diesel engine, it's compression ignition. And what people don't understand, and I will repeat it, is that, you know, the compression of the air in the cylinder is what's heating it. And then when the fuel is sprayed onto the hot air, it ignites on a diesel. On a gasoline engine, in theory, the compression of the air should not heat it to the level where it is going to auto-ignite. So now let's talk about the combustion event in an engine. In a gasoline engine, the combustion event is supposed to be initiated by the spark plug. So what will happen is that the charge, which is identified as fuel and air mixed together, the charge will come into the cylinder, and that's during the intake stroke, right? And actually, it's called cylinder filling in engineering. So it's going to fill the cylinder with charge, and then the piston is going to start to go work towards top dead center, which is the compression stroke. And at one particular point, it is going, the spark plug is going to be ignited, or be arced, I should say, not ignited. It is going to be electrical arc sent across from the side electrode to the central electrode. And that arc, in theory, should ignite the gasoline, which is a homogenized mix of fuel and air, and at a given air-fuel ratio, which is a recipe. So if you say 14.7, let's say 15 parts of air to one part of fuel, that's exactly what it means. So there's 15 parts of air to a single part of fuel. And that is going to be the mixture strength. It would be like you having a sprayer and saying, I have 2 quarts of product in with 1 gallon of water. So that is the mixture strength. So now, in a perfect world, what is supposed to happen is the fuel-air mixture is supposed to wait for the arcing of the spark plug to ignite. Now, you know, when a lot of people, I read this in magazines, and they use the wrong term, and they're innocent, but it's the their innocence is misleading. to people who read it, and I think they misled themselves. They call it an explosion. It is not supposed to be an explosion. It's supposed to be a burning of the gasoline fuel mixture. It's supposed to be a flame is supposed to start. So like you would see, if you were to go and you were to burn a field, which hopefully I am going to do this year, I have to do some research on that. I'm going to burn off my two fields to try to eradicate the seeds that what I have. I had a fall panicum. I had an invasion of fall panicum, and I also had a lot of gibberella in the one field, and we've had a very mild winter so far, and I want to try to burn off those seeds, but I have to talk to somebody who is smarter than I am about that, and I want to see whether that's going to be effective with it. I'm also concerned with my earthworm population, but that's not a discussion for this idle chatter. That's a discussion between me and the guys over at the mill in Maryland, Tim and Ben Hushin, and they're my agronomists. But anyway, so just like when I burn my field and I start a fire and the fire starts to grow and the fire goes to seek fuel, right? So if I start burning the field, then the fire is going to look to seek fuel and it's going to consume the fuel as it travels along. And once it runs out of fuel, which will be the corn stalks and what's left of my fall panicum that I cut down, It will die and it will extinguish and burn itself out. Well, you know, when I light the field does go boom and explodes, right? Thank God. So the same thing happens in a gasoline engine. So it's not an explosion of the fuel. It is an ignition of the fuel and it's burning, and the flame is supposed to propagate and travel across the bore. And just like when you burn a field, the flame is going to travel across the bore, and the flame is going to be searching for fuel, just like burning a field, the flame searches for fuel. So what's going to happen is that when that the spark plug is supposed to ignite the mixture, and then this flame is going to what they call expand across the bore. And I keep making analogies back to the field burning. It's going just like the field. You stand there, you light the field, then it starts to burn away from where you are. So the flame is actually going to burn away from the ignition point in the cylinder, which is the spark plug. And then as the flame travels across the bore, it is going to consume that air and fuel mixture. And what's going to happen is the flame is going to expand. And the expansion of that flame is what actually drives the piston down into the bore. And that is what is called the chemical to mechanical energy exchange. We're taking chemical energy, which is the air and the gasoline and the air mixed together, right? The combustible mixture, and then it's going to grow, it's going to burn and it's going to expand, and that's the chemical and the mechanical energy. So the force of the expansion of the flame is going to work against the piston and push the piston down into the bore, and that is how an engine makes power. On the same note, as an aside to this, the same thing happens with a diesel, but it's a different combustion event, but still it's an expansion of a flame. It is not an explosion as people use it. It's an expansion of a flame. So when that all happens, is that what they would, with an engineering, what we would call that is a normal combustion event. And now the definition of octane in gasoline is the fuel's ability to wait to withstand pressure and heat and wait for the arcing of the spark plug to ignite. So the octane of a fuel has its resistance to auto ignite through pressure and heat and wait for the arcing of the spark plug. So that is a normal combustion event, and that is what you want. You want a normal combustion event. Now, there is within the industry what is called an abnormal combustion event. And now, to a layperson, an abnormal combustion event is knock or ping. So it is actually, if you were to actually study it to a higher level, which I'm not going to do right now, because I want to establish the basics for you to understand what's going on so you don't end up hurting and taking a ring land off a piston on one of your gasoline engines. Is that there's actually, so we have the normal combustion event. That's how you're supposed to put a seed in the ground. The seed germinates, the seed emerges, the plant grows, and it makes fruit, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever it is. So that's a normal cycle. All right. Now, an abnormal cycle means something has gone wrong. So an abnormal cycle, so we would say when the engine pings or knocks, and as I started to say a few seconds ago, is that what's happening, that's actually broken down into two categories. Is there's an abnormal event that starts as the piston is going up towards top dead center pre-ignition, and there's an abnormal event after the piston is already going down towards bottom dead center, which is post-ignition. So, but we're going to identify it just as knock or ping. And then in a minute or so, when I get that point, I will explain to you what you're actually hearing. So in essence, if you have the piston is coming up on top dead center, you have the fuel charge in there, and you have a fuel that is very anxious to burn, to ignite, and not wait for the spark, then as the piston is coming up the top dead center, you're going to have an ignition event start. So now this piston is trying to push up against an expanding flame when it should not be expanding at that particular point. It should be benign in the combustion chamber. There should be no flame whatsoever. Now, what will happen is that an abnormal ignition event, in simple terms, means that you had an event that either started prior to the arcing of the spark plug or another event that started after the arcing of the spark plug. Now, what happens is that when you have a abnormal ignition event, you're going to have, depending upon when in the piston stroke it's going to occur, all right, but like I said, I'm repeating, at this particular level, you don't need to be concerned with that, is what you're basically going to have are two colliding flame fronts. You're going to have the flame that started by itself abnormally, and then you're going to have the spark plug arc and start another flame. And the way I like to teach this, and I've taught it this way for many, many years, and it seems to work well, it works a little bit better when you have a visual aid, but I think I could talk you through it, and I'm sure that the audience, you guys will understand all of that. So if you've ever been on a lake, and I like to use a lake instead of the ocean because the water for most part is calmer and stiller. So if you have a boat going one way and you have a boat going the other way and they pass, and let's say that they're both the same size, they're both the same boat, the same hull, the same weight, they're going the same speed. Let's keep that all common. If you have a boat going one way and a boat going the other way, and then what will happen is they both make a wake, right? So the wake goes out from the hull of the boat. So think of that as the flame expanding from the ignition point, which is the arcing of the spark plug. So let's think of the hull riding in the water, disturbing the water, is the spark plug, and then the wake goes out from that. So the flame is expanding out. Now, when you have a boat that goes the other way, what's going to basically happen is that at one particular point, that if they're close enough, the two wakes are going to collide. So you have the two wakes collide, and if you paid attention to that, when the two wakes collide, what basically happens is that the water, they collide, that water splashes up, and they kind of try to cancel each other out. Well, that's in essence what is happening when you have detonation, abnormal combustion in a gasoline engine. You have a flame that was initiated at the spark plug, or you have one that was initiated prior to the spark plug through pressure or heat, and then it's gonna travel towards the flame that's initiated from the arcing of the spark plug, and they're both going to collide. And when they collide, that collision, the impact from that collision is going to send a shock wave, and it's going to be a pressure peak, but it's going to be a shock wave, like taking a ball peen hammer and hitting a piece of metal with it, hitting a steel girder. There's a shock wave, right? So the thing is that shock wave is going to go, that pressure wave is going to go down into the piston, And then the piston is going to rattle and shake in its bore. And then that shaking, that harmonic that's going to go, that started in the piston, is going to go down into the connecting rod, and down into the bearing and by the crankshaft. And they're pinging the rattling that you, that's why the engine sounds like it's rattling, is because it is actually rattling the piston, the rings, the small end of the connecting rod, the connecting rod itself, and onto the bearings of the crankshaft. So, so in essence, when it, you have abnormal combustion, it would be like taking a ball peen hammer and hitting it, and you're having that tuning fork effect, and that's why the engine does. People say the engine is rattling. It is rattling, but it's rattling because you have multiple flame fronts colliding at the same time, like a wake from a boat going one way and a wake from a boat going the other way, and they collide and they splash up, and they put that shock wave into the piston. And that is why you want to make sure that your gasoline engines do not detonate, because you, or I'll say abnormal combustion events, because it could be detonation or pre-ignition, post-ignition, but abnormal combustion events are, because what it will do is that it's going to end up wearing that engine out prematurely, because that piston is going to be vibrating, the rings are going to be vibrating, and if the abnormal event happens with the piston coming up the top dead center, then you will see, so it's pre-ignition instead of post-ignition, then you will actually take the top half of the rod bearing and hammer that. So if you take a motor apart, take an engine apart, and the top bearing in the rod is going through the babbitt, but the bottom bearing looks like it's still pretty good, it doesn't have any signs of wearing through the babbitt, then that's a very good indicator that that engine suffered a lot of pre-ignition, that there was a flame that was starting prior to the piston reaching top dead center. And so when it was being driven up, that other force was pushed, and that piston was rattling, and that pressure was going against that bearing, and it was actually pushing out what they call the oil film, all right, the oil wedge that supports the bearing from the metal of the journal of the crankshaft. So you will see that. So if you take an engine apart, as I said, and you have a lot of top bearing wear on the rod bearing, that's usually been because it's been pre-ignition, that you've had a flame front start prior to that. So that's under the guise of abnormal combustion. But what will usually happen also is where the two flames collide, and then that they may not collide evenly in the bore. It may not be in the center, it may be to one side, it may be to the left, maybe to the right, maybe in the thrust side, there may be not on the thrust side. I mean, it all depends on where the flame started, how many multiple flame fronts there were, and also the speed of the flame as it travels across the bore. So the two flames will probably not travel at the same speed, and that's a whole discussion unto itself. We don't need to get there. But the fact of the matter is, when you have an abnormal combustion event, you're going to not only have that. So when you have that rattling, it's the crashing of the two flames, all right. But also historically, that there is a very high pressure and temperature peak right there. And then depending on the abnormal event, is that you will actually have the possibility of burning the piston. And usually what will happen is it'll take the ring land off. So you have the top of the piston, the crown, and then you go down and the top ring fits there, and the area between the crown of the piston and the ring is the land area, L-A-N-D, and it's a thinner area, and usually the pressure and heat from that, the pressure spike and the heat from that collision of the two flame fronts will actually either burn that land area off or vibrate it off. Historically, it gets burned off, and then what will happen is you'll have a piece of the piston in the bore, and very quickly, it detonates, it takes the ring land off, and historically, it either scores the wall of the block, or it could actually break the piston and put a piston through the side of the block, because with the connecting rod, it's very, 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 very ugly. All right, so it's important that you don't have that happen. As an aside to this, another thing which, in practical sense, you're not going to be concerned with this, but it's nice for you to understand, is that when I always, the same thing, I always talk about the boat wakes. I always talk about this old movie from, I think it was from the 60s. It was with John Wayne. It was called Hellfighters. And it was, I think it was based upon Red Adair's life. And Red Adair was a famous person in Texas, Oklahoma, and he used to put out oil well fires. And if you watch that movie, Hellfighters, if you ever get a chance to see it, is that they actually, what they would do is they would actually take a small explosive device and they would take a crane and they would put it in the middle of the oil well fire, and he would position this bomb for all intents and purposes, and they would ignite this bomb. And when the bomb would blow, when the bomb would explode, two things would happen. That it would consume the oxygen and it would also blow the oxygen out and blow the flame, blow the oil away. So it actually would put out the oil well fire because you blew the flame out. So it would be like taking a cigarette lighter and taking a big gush of wind and you would blow it out. Well, the same thing happens when you have a abnormal combustion event. So not only does the pressure and heat cause the piston and the connecting rod to vibrate, cause a pressure spike in heat, but it also ends up, the flame ends up blowing itself out to a certain extent. But prior to blowing itself out, because of the high pressure and high heat, the oxides of nitrogen emissions, this is what I was saying, is that you're not overly concerned with that, but the oxides of nitrogen emissions go sky high. All right, so the thing is that that's why the car manufacturers, the engine manufacturers, and we know all about oxides of nitrogen, all right, because of EGR and because of, on a diesel, we have diesel exhaust fluid and a selective catalytic reduction systems, which we spoke about last week. So oxides of nitrogen, which is abbreviated NOx, goes sky high during detonation because it takes a component of the Zeldovich equation, pressure, heat, and exposure time. So the extreme pressure and the extreme heat that happens when you have this abnormal combustion event is going to cause a very high output of oxides of nitrogen. So that is something that you need to keep in mind. And as an aside to that, going back to last week's show on diesel, that's why I was saying is that if you go and you have a higher normal rate of diesel exhaust fluid on your TF4 engine, even though we're not talking about that today, just reiterating it, is that that's an indication of you creating a lot of oxides of nitrogen in the cylinder. And it's an indication of either EGR not working, a lot of carbon fuel delivery issue, what have you, that there's something going on. If all of a sudden you used to burn, let's say, 3 gallons of diesel exhaust fluid per 100 gallons of fuel, and now you're burning 4 or 5 gallons, that's not something you just go, burning more fuel, more DEF now. I mean, that's an indicator. That's like you see in a bump on your hand or something. You say, what's going on here? God forbid you're feeling pain in your left arm and the shortness of breath, that's an indicator of a heart attack. So you have something going on. But on a gasoline engine, we're not going to be, not that we're going to be concerned about it. What we need to be concerned with as people in agriculture is that if we have an abnormal combustion event, that we are going to wear that engine excessively, which we do not want. We could wear that engine excessively. We could actually have an event that actually takes the ringland off the piston. Then, for all intents and purposes, that engine could become junk or has to be rebuilt at a high expense. And that's something that we can avoid. But also, what's happening is that you're not getting the full energy exchange, the chemical to mechanical energy exchange from the fuel, all right, because it's not being burned, the flame is not expanding at the rate it should, and it's not being consumed and working efficiently. So that is the things that we need to think about. So now, if we go back to it, let's go back to octane at gasoline. The ideal is to have an engine that is called octane tolerant. That means it does not need a lot of octane to not evoke an abnormal combustion event. All right. So the thing is that, you know, so what it basically boils down to is that you need to have to be able to, and that's a design function. It's not something you're going to be able to do, but that's a design function of the engine. And the thing is that the ideal when you're designing an engine is to have a combustion event that doesn't demand a lot of octane. All right. So it's not octane hungry. And to do that, there is a lot of design characteristics. It's the combustion chamber design, the mixture motion that's created in the bore, the piston design, the location of the spark plug in the bore. Ideally, you want a centralized location in the bore, and all of these design criteria. But that's something that you cannot control. That's the design of the engine. But it's something for you to keep in mind. So like a friend of mine, a good friend Jake, just bought a couple months back, a new Ram pickup truck. He bought a 8 HD 25 with the 392 Hemi. I think it's 6.4 liter. I'm American, so I got 392. That's actually an old Chrysler Hemi displacement from the 50s, 392. So that's a sacrosanct number. So he bought this Ram to tow his travel trailer. And he didn't do his due diligence. And after he brought it home, he realized he read the owner's manual, and it said that it has to burn high test fuel, premium fuel. So he says, I really went nowhere. He says, because I had a diesel before. It was a Duramax diesel, had about 200 something thousand miles on it. It was rusting all out. Then he and his wife, Ellie, wanted to travel. So they said, we need to get a new truck for this. And then, so he figured, hey, you know, the gasoline was cheaper than the diesel and fuel and less maintenance, so I'm going to buy the gas, which I agree with 100%. But he didn't do his due diligence, and obviously, so now he says, now I have to put $3.60 a gallon premium in this Ram, and I'm really not saving that much on fuel compared to my diesel I had before. So it's whatever. But there's other aspects of it as far as less maintenance is concerned, what have you. But he was looking forward to buying cheaper gasoline, not buying the most expensive gasoline. And over here in New Jersey, there is a quite large differential between the price of regular and the price of premium. So like in town, I could buy regular just the other day for $2.37, where premium is about 70 cents more, 75 cents more, some places 80 cents more. So there is a difference. But to get back to it, so what that's telling me is that 6.4 Hemi in the Ram is not an octane tolerant engine. It's an octane hungry engine, that their combustion event has a propensity to want to go into an abnormal phase, and they're curing that by telling you to use a higher octane fuel. All right, so that is, you know, that's something for you to keep in mind. That if you convert over to a gas vehicle in your operation, then look into it and see, is this supposed to burn premium? Is this supposed to, or can I burn regular? And so the thing is that, yes, you can burn regular, but you're not going to get the full power that you would have and the full efficiency as you would with the premium fuel. So that's to keep in mind. So the first thing basically is that, so the design of the engine will help to make it octane tolerant or octane intolerant. But as regardless of the design of the engine, as time goes on, what is going to increase its octane appetite? Well, the main thing to increase in gasoline engines' octane appetite is carbon deposits on the piston. On the piston and in the combustion chamber. So those are called CCD, combustion chamber deposits, versus IVD, which is intake valve deposits. So when you build carbon deposits on an engine, it is going to hold the heat. The carbon acts as a heat sink. Now, people say, well, it actually raises the compression ratio a little. And yes, it does in theory, because but that's not going to really happen. You're not going to have that much carbon on it. All right. So, but it's acting more as a heat sink. And remember, octane is the fuel's ability to resist pressure or heat and wait for an arcing of the spark plug. So as you have an engine and it gets older, and if you were not good at maintaining and eradicating and keeping it clean from carbon, and this, you know, this thing holds true for a one-cylinder engine on a seed tender also, or your lawn tractor or your chainsaw, or I mean, I'm not just talking about your a big pickup truck or your wife's car or something, is that any gasoline engine, I said in the beginning of the show, it's going to become more octane sensitive, and it's going to have a propensity to want to pre-ignite the fuel because it has a glowing ember there. It has a heat source that is not supposed to be there. And what will happen is that carbon on the piston will actually start to absorb heat. So in essence, so that you may have it at part throttle light load, it doesn't start to detonate, all right? It doesn't start to have an abnormal combustion event, but now you're pulling a trailer and you're heating it up more, and that's becoming a heat sink and absorbing the heat. And then the fuel may want to pre-ignite, or what we would call auto-ignite. So carbon is your main enemy. The next main enemy is an inefficient cooling system, all right, or a cooling system that has too much glycol in it and not enough water. And what's going to happen is the heat transfer from the combustion chamber. So what we're talking about, not the liquid temperature on your gauge, but the surface temperature of the combustion chamber is going to be higher, all right? You may actually see a slight, the gauges on today's modern equipment are actually dampened, so you're not going to be able to see 5 or 10 or 15 degrees there. They're actually dampened. So the thing is that it's a smoothing function in the electronics that dampens it. And that's why you'll pull a trailer or sit in traffic and say, well, look at this thing, it's wonderful, it's not getting any hotter. Well, it is getting hotter, but the gauge needs so much of a rise in liquid temperature for it to move that you think it's wonderful. All right, but the surface temperature of the combustion chamber is going to be a catalyst for auto ignition, because remember pressure, heat, and exposure time. So the thing is that is going to be a catalyst for it. And the thing is that as if you have a cooling system that is not up to snuff, it could have a plugged radiator, it could be a partially open thermostat, whatever it may be. I don't want to get into cooling systems here, but that is another cause of abnormal combustion on an engine. So as the cooling system function degrades, the propensity for abnormal combustion increases. And now, the other thing that comes into play is the mixture strength. So the ratio is that if you have a fuel injector, and I'm going to say fuel injector, and then I'll talk carburetor, but if you have a fuel injector that is not having a nice atomization, breaking down into small particles of the fuel and a nice homogenized mixture, then what will happen is that you will have a cylinder that, or the injector is partially plugged, what have you, or has an air leak there, an O-ring is leaking, you'll have a cylinder that is running lean. A lean air fuel ratio is more prone to an abnormal combustion event than a richer air fuel ratio, because you have to remember there's a window there. There's an inflection point. If you have extremely lean, you're going to have no combustion, so there's no heat, there's nothing to worry about. And then if you're too rich, what you're going to do is that the fuel is going to act like a quench. It's going to cool down the cylinder, so because it's got too much fuel and it can't burn it, so it's got leftover fuel like a wet rag in there. All right, but if you get right at that point, that sweet point, like a surfer riding that curl of the wave, that inflection point is that if you're lean right there, you are going to have a higher combustion temperature, and that higher combustion temperature can evoke abnormal combustion. Then again, pressure, heat, and exposure time. All right, so those are the three main things that are going to cause an engine that did not detonate before to detonate now, have a abnormal combustion event. And over time, it will get worse, and eventually you could end up hurting that engine. And if you don't have a catastrophic failure, such as taking a ring land off the piston and puking a rod out of the side of the block, is that you will have bearing wear, and you will have excessive bearing wear from that bearing, that rod vibrating on and having those that pressure against it, and then you will also have a cylinder that is going to wear in a ring package that is not going to last. So the ring package being the three rings, the compression ring, the middle ring, and the oil ring, from that vibration in there, what you're going to do is you're going to end up wearing that ring package, and you're going to have, and you're going to also wear that cylinder wall more. So that cylinder wall is going to become glazed over, and then that's going to add to it and have worse of a sealing problem. And keep in mind that another area of possibility of detonation is oil getting into the cylinder. So if you have an engine that has a worn ring package, specifically an oil ring, or you have a leaky valve guide and valve stem seal, historically a valve guide and valve stem seal will smoke on startup and then burn off, but depending upon how worn it is. I've seen cylinders where you could take and rock the valve and the guide, and then what's going to happen is that you're going to be dripping oil down into that cylinder every time that valve drips. And it's oil has a great propensity, has like zero octane. It's going to want to ignite when it's mixed with the gasoline. So that is a problem right there. So to recap as we go, look to close here, is that you do not want an engine to detonate at all. If it starts to detonate and starts to knock severely, lift the throttle. All right, because what it will do is it'll take the cylinder pressure away and it'll stop that detonation. Be mindful of detonation, all right? It is the telltale of something that's not good that's going to be coming down the road that you want to look. If you're buying a new gasoline engine, you want to look to see for one that is octane tolerant and not like Jake did, unless you're looking to put high test fuel and everything. But remember, premium fuel is only a band-aid. You could have an engine that demands premium fuel and have carbon built up. You could have a valve stem seal leaking, valve guide leaking, what have you, inefficient cooling system, and you're still going to run into an abnormal combustion event, all right? So the thing is that you want to keep that all under check, and if you do have an engine that has weak valve stem seals and starts, when it starts after it sits, it blows some blue smoke, then when you're burning off that oil, you're going to be creating carbon deposits on those pistons and also in the backside of valve on a piston at an exponential rate, because that oil burning is going to create a lot of carbon, and then it's going to be a vicious cycle, and then it's going to want to detonate because of the carbon, and then you're off to the races. I mean, it's just building upon itself. But keep in mind that you could chemically remove carbon from an engine by using a piston soak product like the GM top engine cleaner, or additizing your gasoline with something like with a fuel systems cleaner. It has to say it cleans the, and you could use those on carburetors also. So a fuel systems cleaner that you could put that in there, and over time it will start to chemically dissolve the carbon and then burn it off. So that's something that you should always, always use. And I treat all of my gasoline engines, I particularly like Chevron Techron complete fuel systems cleaner, and I use that on my carbureted motors. I use that on my fuel injected motors. And the thing is that you want to, it's like cleaning your teeth. You don't want to let that carbon build up on an injected engine. You want to keep the injector pattern clean and proper, but you really don't want to let that build up. But there are, if you have an older engine and you were not good with that, if you go to a GM dealer, they have, it used to be called GM top engine cleaner. I think they call it fuel injection cleaner now. And it's a, and you could actually use that as a piston soak. So what you would do is you would take the spark plugs out, you'd pour an ounce or so on top of the piston, you'd let it sit for 12 hours or so, 13, 14 hours. And then what you would do is you would take all the spark plugs back out and turn the engine by hand, and it will loosen up the carbon, and whatever liquid didn't leak past the rings will be pushed out of the cylinder. And then you would need to change the oil, because some of it's going to drip into the oil and it has very poor lubricity. You don't want to ruin your oil. And then you'd start the engine and run, and it's going to smoke like a crop duster, an old crop duster, because that's the chemical that leached into the carbon, and then it'll smoke. If you have no smoke, then you didn't have any carbon. And then the smoke, and then it'll burn off, and you'll be surprised what a difference it will make. But the thing that I want to tell you here before I move on into the toolbox test is that you cannot ignore. you cannot ignore detonation, because if you ignore detonation, you're in, and if you, like I said, you don't blow, if you don't blow it up, you're going to end up having excessive wear and premature failure of that engine, and that's all money that has to be earned on the farm. So if you have any questions or any comments, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. I could go on for 3 hours with this. I'm looking at my meter. I'm 54 minutes into the show already, and this is a, I would love to be able to talk to you for, because there's a lot more to say, but this is what you need to do to be profitable. You don't need to be a combustion engineer, but this is what you need to do to be profitable on the farm, is to maintain those engines, prevent premature failures, and get the most use out of them. And that's, God willing, what I hopefully gave you today. All right, so now what is going to happen is we're going to get ready for our toolbox test question. So Tex Rabinowitz from Ripsaw Records, he is the hot rod man. And from what I understand, Ripsaw's website is almost done. So I'm going to invite you to look at that when it is done. But before we do that, Tex always has to introduce us and tell us to put our thinking caps on for the toolbox test.
Well, I'm a rolling daddy with a mean machine. It's got to be an motor that sure is clean. I'm a hot rod man. Yeah, I'm a hot rod man. Look out, little mama, gonna get you if I can.
All righty, Tex. Thanks so much. We're getting ready to look at that new website you got there, buddy. He's hot rodding it, right? He always is. Love that song. Hopefully you enjoy it also. Okay, so we are on test, I think, number 4. I don't want to make too much paper noise here. And we're on question number 2. And I am going to read it to you. And as always, be concerned with what the right answer is, not whether it's farmer A, B, C, or D. All right, so we're on question number 2, test 4. You really do not like to haul your grain too far, but you need to make some room in your on-farm storage for the new harvest. And the price you could get for your old crop is 10 cents higher, about 100 miles away. You push the pencil and it reveals that it would be profitable to put some wheels under it. On the third trip from the elevator back to the farm, you get detoured due to an accident that closed the two-lane. Being low on fuel, you stop at an unfamiliar small truck stop to fill the saddle tanks. They only have B20 and you fill up and hit the road. All is well until the next day when you're about one quarter of the way into the second fuel tank and the engine starts to act up. Oh no, you say to yourself, a tow home or road call will eat up all the extra profit you made by selling to this elevator. The truck manages to limp home barely. The next morning, after sleeping on it, you decide to pull the fuel filter and water separator. The fuel filter is plugged with sludge. In the shop, you have an extra filter, so you change it and the engine runs fine. You resume hauling grain, but are worried about a repeat of the event. At the elevator, you bring it up to a couple of guys, and this is their opinion. Farmer A knows the truck stop and says that the tanks are less than 6 months old, so they must have gotten a load of dirty fuel. Farmer B told you that B20 has a cleaning effect and loosened up all the sludge in your saddle tanks and put it into the filter. Farmer B just said he does not know what happened, but you should never use B20 unless the truck maker says so. And Farmer D has no idea, but chimes in that is why he never hauls grain too far. There's always one of those guys, right? He's got to really give it to you. So that is your question, and that is your choices, and I'm making noise with the paper. But now we are going to get to the special delivery segment, and then we will get the toolbox test question answer, and then that'll be it for this week. Okay. So this gentleman writes, my name is Joe, and I listen to your show every week. Well, thank you, Joe. I went back in your archives, and I listened to your show on why you need to additize diesel fuel. As an aside to that, you know, most of the hosting sites have all my shows, but none of them do. If you go to my website, farmmachinerydigest.com, and go into Idle Chatter, there's almost 100 shows there. But anyway, let's see. I try to use premium diesel, which already has additives. When I spoke to the fuel dealer, they said I do not need anything else. What are your thoughts? I agree with what you always say about reliability and profit. I just want to do the right thing. Thanks and God bless. And he is in Idaho someplace, Joe from Idaho. Well, thanks so much for listening, Joe, and for writing in and sending me the email, because I know that that question is probably asked by a lot of people. And I know that some fuel dealers snicker at what I say, because, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about from New Jersey. But anyway, this, I'm going to be very succinct with it. Number one is that if the fuel, I believe in buying premium fuel, so that's not an issue. But I still believe that you need to additize it with an additive that has seven modes of action in it. And those modes need to handle sludge, cetane. They have to be a fuel stabilizer. They have to get rid of the moisture. They have to have an anti-gel. They have an anti-waxing. So all these components that need to come into it. The problem lies is twofold. Number one is that the premium diesel fuel marketers, retailers, do not really tell you what they may say. They have a cetane package in it. They may have an anti-corrosion additive in it, but they don't tell you to what level. So the fact of the matter is that I have to trust them and believe that it is a better product, all right, that it has some additives in it, but they're not telling you. So in other words, if the fuel is supposed to be 40 cetane, and they say, well, we have a cetane additive, what is the cetane of their fuel? They're not telling you. So you're basically, I'm not saying you're buying a pig in a poke. You have to trust them. You have to trust them, but there's no numbers assigned to it. If there's no numbers assigned to it, then I'm very suspicious of it. Not suspicious that they're trying to rip me off, but if it has a cetane additive, maybe their base fuel was 40 cetane and they brought up to 40.25. I have no idea. So that's the one thing. And then also, are they only treating for two or three modes of action? Are they treating for six or seven modes of action? What are they actually treating for? The second component is, let's say it's the best fuel in the world. Couldn't be any better. Fantastic, right? Seven modes of action, 50 cetane, all you want, everything great, fantastic. That's when it left the refinery. What happened to it in transit? And what happens to it in transit, it mixes in with moisture, it mixes in with sludge, it goes into dirty tanks and what have you. So what happens is that when it gets to the farm, it is not what it was when it left the refinery, or it's slightly degraded or possibly greatly degraded. I remember taking a class about a dry fertilizer years ago, and I believe that they said boron, if you have a lot of boron in with your dry fertilizer mix and you're driving 20 miles, that the boron is heavier and it goes sinks to the bottom of the hopper, and then when you start to spread broadcast the fertilizer, the first part of the field gets all the boron, then you have a boron toxicity issue because it all separates. So the same thing is basically happening, is what is happening to that fuel in transit, and what is the state of the condition of your on-farm storage tank. So my attitude is, buy a premium fuel. That's great. That's fantastic. Use an additive, as I always say, on top of that. You're not going to have any antagonistic effect between what's in their fuel and a good quality additive that you're putting in there. And you're treating it at your farm as it goes into your tank. So you're worrying about you're taking care of the sludge, the moisture, and you're doing your best to negate whatever is happening to that fuel on its journey from the refinery to your farm. And your engines will love it. Your pocketbook will love it. Everything will love it. And it, like I say, then that's basically in essence, because you could have the best fuel in the world at the refinery. You have to determine what's happening when it gets to your farm and you're putting in your equipment. And that's why I'm a firm believer in additizing the fuel. So, alrighty, so we're going to go back to our toolbox test question here. And I'm going to be getting my answers here. Alrighty, I like to read these so I don't go off on a tangent. Alrighty, so we had that problem where we put some B20 in the truck delivering grain, and then we ended up plugging the fuel filters, and then we have to determine what happened. So farmer B is the most correct. All right, so the operative word is most correct. I say this because any blend of biodiesel has a cleansing effect and will loosen up any deposits in the tank and complete fuel system. Though some of the sludge may have come from the truck stop tank, the fact that they are new would mean that the tanks did not have a high level of deposits. The grain truck is older, which most grain trucks are, right? So it has the natural formation of sludge in the saddle tanks if the farmer used untreated fuel. That is why it took a day or so for the filter to plug. So that is a common scenario. You go to some biodiesel, it has a cleansing effect. You go through a filter change, and then you are fine after that. Same thing happens on your on-farm storage tank. I love biodiesel. It's a great fuel. The flip side of it is that it's got a detergent, a cleansing effect, and it's going to show, it's going to loosen up all the sins of the past. But once you get past those sins, you're all going to be fine. So listen, I want to thank you so much for entertaining me today by tuning in and clicking into my show. And I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved, beloved America. You have a blessed week, and keep your ears open for that abnormal combustion. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.